So we wanted to welcome everybody for coming today to our panel, the Pocket Film Studio, the iPhone Revolution. I'm Matt Desner. I'm the co-founder of the original iPhone Film Festival and iPhoneFilmmaker.com. We're here to talk about the impact and the empowerment of the iPhone as an all-in-one filmmaking tool. And we have a terrific panel assembled today, and I want to take a moment to introduce them. I'm just really grateful you guys made it, some of us by just a few minutes.
I don't know what you're talking about.
We'll talk after you're in trouble. Okay, so everybody's off to my left. Caleb Deschanel is a 5-time Oscar nominee for cinematography, recognized by the American Society of Cinematographers with its Lifetime Achievement Award. He shot such classic films as The Black Stallion, Being There, The Right Stuff, The Natural, a real underachiever, The Patriot, Passion of the Christ. He has completed work on 3 films that will be released this year, including Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter, One Shot with Tom Cruise, and Killer Joe, directed by William Friedkin, which happened to screen last night right here at South by Southwest. And Caleb is also the director of many feature films and hundreds of television episodes and commercials. Sean Sofried is co-founder of Red Giant Software, home of many post-production plugins, including Magic Bullet, which is used by over 100,000 film editors worldwide. This company started with 2 products and has since grown to offer more than 50 products, with a team that spans the United States, Canada, and China. Before founding Red Giant in 2002, he worked on the Apple QuickTime team, managing QuickTime VR and QuickDraw 3D technologies. And at Silicon Graphics, he led efforts to add innovative video features to the company's PC hardware systems. At Puffin Designs, he worked as a product manager on Commotion and groundbreaking video paint application that originated at Industrial Light and Magic. Serenity Caldwell is a staff editor at Macworld Magazine. Hi, Serenity. Serenity has been riding on, talking about, and tinkering with Apple products since she was old enough to double-click. She wears many hats, both figuratively and literally. She writes and edits for Macworld and its ebook program, sketches, sings, and scribbles on her blog, rants endlessly about books, television, and film to just about anyone who will listen, and in her secret superhero life, plays roller derby. Is that true?
That is true.
All right, well, I see some of that footage. Michael Corbell is a writer, director, and co-founder of Magic Pictures. He directed what is widely viewed as the first film shot and edited entirely on the iPhone 4, Apple of My Eye. His follow-up project, Goldilocks, is a 10-episode action series, which was also shot on the iPhone 4, and that series has garnered over 100 write-ups, including 2 New York Times articles. Michael is finalizing his MFA at USC. Oh, no, you're finished with your MFA.
Yes.
I apologize.
No, it's okay. It's my bad.
Michael's finished his MFA at USC School of Cinematic Arts, and with every project he aims to continually stretch and bend the boundaries of technology. So that's who's on our panel. Now we're going to get into the really, really fun stuff. Not that you guys are not fun. So just a kind of a baseline, I think, of where we are today before we jump right in with our panel. You know, for the past 40 or 50 years, people went to photography exhibits and they went to go buy records, remember that, and go see films. The professionals were the creators. Today, everyone is a photographer, a musician, a filmmaker. In the past, there was an inherent mystery to how it all got done. How can I make a film? How can I learn to shoot and record sound? And then, of course, there was the financial barrier. Today, anybody can do it. People know the secrets. But with technological advances like the iPhone and other iOS devices, it seems like there's no ceiling on individual creativity. Is it a good thing? And is there a difference between creator and artistry? These are some of the things that we're going to tackle in our discussion in a few minutes. And before we engage the panel, I thought I'd show you a quick montage of some of the iPhone films that we saw at this year's OIFF. Audio?
She said she couldn't stay when her night had just begun. She wanted me to know what or she didn't know herself. Said I was one of my lovers. Hey now, that's something else. She played a vocal mission. I played the cosmic heart. Wanted to paint a picture. She said, don't even start. She said, love's like a drug and that this was chemistry. But with these chemicals, then how is this good for me? Her life gets better, she bred. Her man goes out of his head. Like birds of a feather, so we bled. Let's go together. And she said, so what's the altitude? I said, it's out of sight. What's with the attitude? And she said, it's alright. So what's the altitude? I said, it's out of sight. What's with the attitude? And she said, it's alright. She said, let's get away now. Let's go down by the bay. She turned her hand my way now. Watch out what you say now. Now the things you've been through make it seem like nothing could ever really last forever. But if you try, girl, we can do some things. She gave me headphones. Said, have you heard this sound? I think I've heard this one. It's totally underground. I wouldn't let her go then.
So it's pretty amazing. All those films were shot with something that most of us probably have in our pockets right now. That's a pretty compelling thought. So there's a lot of talk. I'm going to switch and sit down now because I've been dying to do that. Is this my cup?
There's been a lot of talk about democratization and what this tool can really do, and I think we should just touch on that for a little bit. How has the iPhone democratized filmmaking? And Michael, I think, has a really compelling story. Maybe you can tell us a little bit why you chose to use the iPhone 4 to tell Apple of My Eye, and really what happened after that.
Yeah. So when the iPhone 4 was first coming out, you know, I'd seen, 720 HD video, and it wasn't until the night that the phone was arrived, because I pre-ordered it, and I was looking at it and was like, you know, it'd be kind of fun just to test the lens on this thing and see what it can do. And my writing partner and I, we basically were like, let's just make a movie. And so we pulled together a bunch of ideas, some actors we had worked with, and I ended up making a film of putting the iPhone on my dad's model train. And he has this huge model train set in the desert in Arizona, and kind of rode through the whole thing. And it was overnight. Like, we literally made it just for fun. And it was immediately, like, on the front page of Vimeo. And the next thing you know, it was just like, wow, everybody wants to see iPhone stuff, or at least model trains. But what was more interesting was afterwards, iPhone accessory manufacturers began just randomly contacting us. Or there would be a package that would be outside. You know, they would find my address. Lord knows how that happened. But they would drop the stuff off. My partner and I, we had been working on a pilot script, actually, a dramatic pilot script. It had been kind of shopping around, but it wasn't getting any traction. We're like, you know what? This would be perfect in 10 episodes. And so we felt an obligation, since we had all this gear, to make a web series. And what was awesome about it was we kind of attacked it with the idea of we wanted to shoot and distribute it on the same device. So we also created an app. Well, let me tell you, I don't know if you've ever created a web series, but it's hard to keep your viewers coming back and stuff. But if you can send them a notification, you can get them to watch it almost immediately because it's on the device they already have. So anyways, one thing led to another, and
it's fascinating.
It's overwhelming, actually.
Snowballed.
Yes.
Really. And really, I think that, you know, having the iPhone and enabling you to tell that story was really the key to all of that.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, when we went to make the web series, literally we had no money to just go buy a DSLR, but we did already have the phones. And so we took the camera we already had, and we just made it. And we shot, you know, 25 days and 18 locations with full action. I mean, we did the whole thing. We, you know, basically paid for craft services. So.
Well, it's amazing. And so many technologies moving so fast. But what it reminds me of a bit is that, you know, there's a lot of famous filmmakers now who have a similar story where they were first empowered by the device they found at their house. And I'm sure a lot of us have heard about, Steven Spielberg saying that a Super 8 camera was at his house when he first picked it up and decided that, wow, I feel like this is something that's really engaging and I want to tell stories, and now I have something I can do it with. And there's a lot of parallel stories like that. And I think that Michael's isn't necessarily that different. I think the key there, again, is the technology now that's laying around the house, what we're calling old. But Caleb and I were talking before about how every 2 years the technology moves so quickly. So people upgrade their phones, and then some sell them, and some give them to their kids or have them lay around. And so I just thought that maybe we talked a second about how is the iPhone really the new Super 8 camera that's, you know, being found in Dad's closet and that is a conduit for the next filmmaker out there. So, Renny, what do you think, or Caleb, what do you think about that?
Oh, gosh. Well, I mean, I feel like the iPhone has a great entry point for people who maybe necessarily either are passionate about film and haven't really gotten an avenue in which to play with. I mean, when I was in high school, I basically had to wait until my senior year before I could save up the money to buy a little tiny HD camera, which I thought was the best thing ever at the point. But that, you know, that was like $1,200 and all of my savings at that point. And in contrast, you have, you know, the iPhone is a $500 purchase or, you know, $300 with a contract. But when people think about buying a phone, it's very different from thinking about buying a big video camera. It's like, oh, no, I need a phone, so I'll go out and buy the phone. And the phone, oh, also happens to be an HD video camera. So for all of those people who want to be filmmakers but don't necessarily have the extra revenue to, you know, go ahead and buy a $1,200 camera, it's a great entry point for them. And then also people who maybe never thought that they'd be interested in filmmaking, and they, you know, they start shooting. Who knows? Maybe they decide to film a lecture at their high school or their college, or they decide to goof off with some friends someday and make a video of two people fighting with lightsabers, and they start thinking, oh, well, maybe if I can film it from down here, or maybe I can capture this angle or that angle, and all of a sudden they start getting this passion for it. And with the iPhone, it's so great that not only can you shoot on it, but you can also edit on it. And that is a really sort of unique entry point, which a lot of other devices this day, it's very different from the Super 8 camera where, you know, with a Super 8, you'd film, but then you'd have to wait to get it developed. Even with, you know, with Betacam or with DV, you would still, you know, do reel-to-reel VCR cutting and pasting manually, or if you have option of using a computer, you'd be doing it that. With an iPhone, not only can you just film whatever's in front of you and cut some angles together, you can actually do it right on the phone or on an iPad, cut together iMovie. So yeah, I think it's a very interesting device for new filmmakers. Yeah. Caleb?
Well, I've never made a movie with a camera that weighs less than 25 pounds. So, you know, I mean, it was always kind of my dream to have something that you could just sort of move around. And, you know, when my kids were little, we started taking movies with Super 8 cameras and everything. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the problem with that was that you would always have to have it with you. And the thing that's amazing now is the fact that an iPhone can be with you all the time. It is because it's a phone, because you need your phone. But then you find you can actually film something. And I find that that makes a huge difference. And I mean, I think there is the idea of the intention of people who actually want to be filmmakers who will go out and, you know, make a movie with an iPhone. But to me, I'm more interested in the sort of ephemeral aspect of people discovering it as a process, and I think that's what having the availability of a movie camera or, you know, video camera in your phone, it does, like you say, introduce people to something that they never expected to find out. And I think that's what's really remarkable about it. I mean, you know, you see it happen all the time now where, you know, police get caught doing things because somebody has their iPhone and they photograph it. But, you know, I really think that what is the most interesting thing for me is the potential for the fact that everybody has these movie cameras to create something totally different. Because, I mean, we think of movies, of going to theaters. It's becoming more and more that we see them sometimes, you know, on televisions or on iPads or even on iPhones. Mm-hmm. And there's something out there, and somebody, you know, with some great genius is going to discover another way of entertaining us or taking us on a journey and telling stories that we can't even conceive of. And that to me is what's so exciting about it, because as soon as you get a device out to enough people, Like you were talking about mm-hmm. democratization. I mean, if you think about the internet, it was originally designed so that the military and, you know, and colleges could share information and everything. And somewhere along the way, somebody in a lab who was going to send out invitations or make a lot of phone calls to friends to invite them to a party said, well, wait a second, we're all on this amazing system of the internet, so I'll invite people to a party.
Right.
You know, everybody from the lab can come to the party. Well, it literally changed our lives because somebody, you know, took something that would had one intention, just the way iPhones maybe have one intention, and now it's being altered because people realize its potential in other areas. And that to me is the most fascinating part of that all.
You know, and I think potential is also one of the key words that comes into play whenever I get into a conversation about iPhone filmmaking. It does a lot of things now, as we're all pretty aware of. And I think, as a sidebar, when someone takes a piece of technology and kind of twists it on its ear and kind of repurposes it, where they'll take three of them and shoot, you know, a story just because they can have access to it, I think that's really compelling. But one of the things that I think sometimes is overlooked beyond the expectation of a traditional movie is, because it is with you or a lot of us all the time, how it's come into play with journalism a little bit, just to take that tack for a second. You know, the ability for someone in the field, particularly what's happening in the Middle East, and just to stay away from politics, but for someone to have almost an invisibility to them that needs to collect a story in a dangerous area, by having an iPhone, they're able to hold that up and not only collect the story and possibly alleviate some of the safety concerns because it's not a giant camera that screams, I'm going to document what's happening here. It also allows people to quickly edit the story or upload it to the cloud, which is the term that's very popular now. And then whether it's the New York Times or whoever, that downloads that footage and puts a cut together. So the iPhone 4, and of course subsequent 4S, and then we'll see what happens this year with what's coming, but I think it's an incredible tool for, as just an eyewitness part.
Yeah.
I think even like there's now in the iMovie app, there's a CNN iReport theme. So you can literally, you know, shoot your stuff. You can edit within this theme, so it's all with the CNN, you know, logo and all that kind of stuff, and then upload it to iReport. So.
Yeah, which I think is amazing that they're integrating that way. You know, one of the people that we've met along the way of throwing the festival is a company called Vericorder. And what's amazing about their app is it's geared towards exactly what we're talking about, journalists in the field. And so they could be all around the world, and there can be a news division that just wants to cover a particular story, and through the app, they can actually just notify regionally or geographically a set of stringers that might be out there and say, there's a story that's going to happen, or this is going to, can you cover it? So it's also a very two-way system with the iPhone. As you mentioned earlier about doing app alerts for people to realize there's a new episode in your series, the same thing could be repurposed to contact stringers or journalists in a particular field at any time, and not across everyone that has the app. So I'm fascinated by that tool as well.
Absolutely. It's amazing what app development is doing in connection with having the high definition camera and everything else. I mentioned the editing, but there are also, and tools like Vericorder, there are also tools for narrative filmmaking like a Collabricam, which allows you to basically take an iPad or an iPhone and declare yourself, all right, I'm going to direct this project, and then you can wirelessly hook up with people who have three or four other iPhones. So you can control camera angles, you can give remote directions like tilt up at this scene. So you end all of that footage gets downloaded to that central director machine. And that app is what, like $5-$10?
Yeah, it's
crazy.
Amazing.
The entry point for people who want to do all kinds of crazy things with this device is so incredibly low in comparison. I mean, when you think of just a couple of years ago, if you wanted to really seriously investigate filmmaking, whether it was narrative or whether it was documentary, you had to buy not only thousands of dollars worth of equipment, but you had to buy thousands of dollars worth of software. And now, I mean, granted, a $5 purchase to buy iMovie is not going to get you the same features or quality as buying Final Cut or Media Composer or something like that, but it's still giving you the basic tools to try and go forward.
Absolutely. And I think, software is sometimes overlooked. I mean, so we're talking about collecting images and shooting and forming a narrative and editing, but, a lot of tools that people like to turn to after they shoot is, a post-production suite of tools where Sean is an expert in, and I guess I'm always curious to know, So now that we have a lot of people that are taking this more seriously as a either journalistic tool or something that's for creative content, in terms of manipulation of images, Magic Bullet Suite is something that Red Giant has, and that's one of the go-to pieces of software for anyone that isn't familiar with it, to color correct imagery on the desktop platform. So if you offload your footage and you need to correct color, Magic Bullet is a very, very powerful tool. So I'm wondering, in terms of being on the phone, what are some of the limitations now, or what's possible, or what do you think is coming down the pike for people that yearn to have some of that post-production manipulation right there in the field on the phone?
Well, it's already happening. We've got we have an app that we built called Movie Looks that's the first attempt at that, but what we found out is that consumers don't like to wait. So the app, while it's been okay, has not been a huge success because we, I think, took the wrong tack. There's a couple of apps called like Social Cam and Vidi and a few others that try to do real-time effects. And in my opinion, they look sort of junky, but for the average consumer, they look great because there's not this sense of what is possible or what a professional level is about. Whereas our application kind of comes from the idea of, well, you want to make the image look absolutely as best as it can, and so it has a 9-stage pipeline for color correction and all of the stuff that, while it can turn out great images, isn't really aimed at the right audience. And I think, while ours today is fairly slow by desktop standards, it takes about 5 times the length of the film to actually process it. So if you have 1 minute, it takes 5 minutes to output it at 720p. But in the future, that's going to come down really rapidly.
Yeah.
The new iPad that's coming out next week has double the GPU horsepower of the iPad that shipped last year. And the stuff that's coming from PowerVR, who makes that GPU that accelerates all the display inside of the iPad, is already promising to quadruple that within the next 2 years. So, we're talking about an 8x gain within 24 months.
Do you think there's an expectation for that, Sean? I mean, do you think people are just expecting some of these tools to come over to the mobile side, where it can't be ignored? I mean, if you're going to be in this space of software and post-production manipulation, you have to be in the mobile space?
Well, sure, absolutely. Once the enabling platform is there, people will start to take advantage of it. That's just the way it's going to work. I mean, if we could have moved our desktop tools directly to the mobile environment, we would have done it immediately.
Mm.
But we realized that there wasn't enough memory, there wasn't enough horsepower, so we cut it down. But in 2 years, there's no reason we can't put Looks on the iPad.
Yeah, I mean, I think that addresses something that's really interesting about modern technology. I mean, a couple of years ago, there was an article in Wired about how, for me, always growing up with technology, it was always that the next technology was better in quality, and it was more sophisticated in terms, in other words, if you had a camera, it just had looked better. And what happened with modern technology is that it got to the point where, with music and things like that, people were willing to accept a loss of quality for, an advantage in terms of convenience. And, the fact is that you may have, some lower quality with visual images or something, but the fact that it exists where it never would have existed, the fact that somebody's created a movie that they couldn't have created before is more important. The fact that it can actually create media is much more important than its quality. And I think that's a world that we live in now. And I think once things start catching up, maybe the quality will improve. But it is interesting. I mean, the fact that you have footage of some incident because you happen to have your iPhone is more important than, if I had only had my Super 8 camera, if I'd only had my, Panavision camera, whatever, I could have filmed that. But, it makes a big difference. And that's the world we live in now. And where that's going, I don't think any of us can really predict.
I just jumping on that really quick. I mean, I don't know how many Super 8 cameras were made, but last time I checked, like 200 million iPhones, I think this was back in 2010, I saw this stat, have sold. I mean, that's a ridiculous number of cameras that are out there, And I think, you know, I mean, with the software and everything, everybody is jumping in on that because it is there. And with 200 million phones on the market, that's not even counting iPads, a $1.99 app, if only 1% of those people buy your app, you've done pretty good.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, again, a lot of these words come up and bubble to the top, empowerment and democratization and accessibility. And then you often find yourself in a debate of whether that's all really a good thing. And I'm from the perspective that it is a good thing. But I think, you know, some contrarians say that just because you can do it doesn't mean you're good at doing it. And that's certainly true. So we have all this content that's being created. And I think if you just stop to take a moment to realize what the iPhone 4 has done, it's enabled people to tell a story that normally maybe wouldn't have put themselves out there, whether it's something about themselves or covering a particular issue or just doing something creatively. And I get really, you know, jazzed about that idea, and it's one of the reasons why we started this event. And I think that, you know, there's a lot of value in that if you think about what's going on, because it takes bravery to tell a story, in my opinion. You know, you put yourself out there. And if someone feels that the iPhone 4 does it for them, or whatever iPhone, you know, is the current phone of the times, I think it's amazing, which just goes in line, I think, with what Caleb's saying and about, you know, the future's unknown, and I think more and more people will kind of come forward and bubble up with some really amazing, creative things that normally you would not see, or you'll learn about something.
Well, hopefully, too, we're going to start seeing not just things that address posts, but also address the way films get made.
Yeah.
You know, Michael was saying about having to shoot over 25 days in 18 locations. There should be a way for a platform to enable communication so that he can find other people that would help him do that and do it faster and better. You know,
yeah, absolutely.
And particularly in the LA area, I'm sure there's a lot of people that have phones and have the capability to shoot good images. And if he had a way to find out where those people are, to network with them easily and assign them tasks.
Yeah. And we've heard that dialogue before, for sure.
One of the things that's funny is we actually crowdsourced some aerial shots in the web series because, you know, I don't have a plane. I can't fly, you know, over L.A. or New York or whatever. And we actually put it out there, and people submitted shots. Like, this one guy, he sprays for bugs over Los Angeles. And I don't know how safe it was when he was spraying for bugs and simultaneously shooting out of his airplane. But he sent us the footage, and it's in the web series. So yeah, you're right. Like, connecting, I mean, it's everybody has this. When we do, in fact, right now we're finishing up at episode 10. And normally I would have, you know, you'd have to go in for ADR and sound looping and all this kind of stuff. And right now there's notes out to three of our actors. One's in Canada, one's in New York, and one's in LA. And they're just recording it on their iPhone in the Memo app, and they're going to send it to us later tonight. And that's crazy.
Yeah,
I mean, like,
it's crazy.
How does that happen?
I think it's amazing. Right. I mean, you know, and I'm just wondering, you know, coming at it from the other side, and, Caleb, I think you could probably give us a little hint. I mean, would the production value sort of barrier becoming less of a barrier? And Michael, I think, is just proof of concept of some of the stuff that he's done with the iPhone 4. Have you seen any integration at all? And how's it currently used? I mean, I don't suspect the answer, obviously, is to replace an Arri or a Panavision camera. But, you know, on set, where have you seen the iPhones being used in the process of making a film?
Well, I just finished a film, which is kind of an action film. And we were doing some rehearsal. There was a rehearsal that we had of a big fight that happens in a very small bathroom. Mm-hmm. And the stunt guys had all these iPhones, and you could just tape them to the wall in all these different positions to get all the different camera angles for the fight that then, you know, the director and I could look at. And, you know, we were watching the fight while it was going on and saying, well, why don't we put one, you know, over the sink here and put one, you know, inside the tub here and put one up here. And you know, in the end, we were able to edit it all together and figure out all the camera angles. So it's a tool that we use a lot. I use it a lot. You know, when I'm location scouting, I use it for all sorts of, you know, sort of ancillary things related to actually shooting a movie. So you know, where that goes in the future, I'm not sure. I mean, the potential for it is amazing. I mean, if you think that the quality keeps increasing.
So pre-visualization. Yeah. Location scouting.
Or like a crash cam, even. Like if you just needed to throw a camera out there just to
Well, I mean, they're, you know, on a big feature film, you use a Canon D5 or something for that, you know, which has slightly better quality, but not much. Right. Not much.
Yeah, but who knows in the next couple of years.
It's yeah, no, absolutely. Right. I mean, you know, I was saying earlier that Nikon's coming out with a still camera that has, you know, 34 megabytes of
yeah, it just
information
goes
in a 35 millimeter chip, which is pretty close to anything you could get.
Yeah, you know, actually, you know, I know that there was a particular shot that Michael pulled off. He wanted to have the POV from inside, I think, was it inside a glass of water?
Yeah, a wine glass.
A wine glass. So I won't steal your thunder. So how did you pull that up?
No, I mean, when we made the series, we kind of made a wish list of all the places that we'd ever wanted to put a camera,
yeah,
but couldn't, you know, hadn't. And one of them was inside a wine glass, and you know, filling it up. And we actually one of the it's a spy thriller in the vein of like Bourne Identity, but it's more like Salt, I guess. But anyway, so I guess I should have just said Salt. But we actually one of the murders or one of the assassinations is seen from inside the wine glass, and it's just cool perspective, you know. It's and yeah, I mean, you could do that with professional cameras and the right lenses and the macro lenses and everything. But for us, it was just kind of like, where could we put this that we just went, I mean, we mounted it to motorcycles and little, are you guys familiar with the Parrot AR drone helicopters? We've mounted it to that. We have an episode coming out where there's an app that tracks color. So we put these stickers on the back of a car and literally this Parrot AR drone chased this car through the desert, and it's
did you just, get the phone back or no?
We did. Well, you know, it comes back. So,
well, you know, something I'm really curious about and why nobody has done it yet. But I mean, you know, one of the big problems with doing 3D is that the interocular distance of big cameras, you can't put two cameras together, so they have to use mirrors to do that. Whereas if you took an iPhone and you put another one upside down right next to it, you could actually create the interocular distance that you need to create really incredible 3D. And
I think we should do this.
Yes.
We should do this short.
Right after that.
Yeah.
No, networking on stage.
It'd be pretty cool because, yeah. I mean, it reminded me, because you're talking about being in a wine glass, the fact that you have a device that's so small. I mean, the only way to do it other, you know, before this was, you know, some kind of, you know,
CGI
a fiber optics or something like that. So
yeah, I mean, I've seen some early 3D tests with multiple iPhones, actually.
Really?
Yeah, there's actually,
but you have to sync them up. That's
yeah,
one of the big problems.
Exactly. Well, it's basically like, all right, pressing record at the same time and then going in post-production. But there
but
was
be
a
easy, it'd be easy to for somebody who knows something about that stuff
to possibly program
to have a device to sync them up.
Sean's brain is on fire.
Yeah.
But well, they both have Bluetooth, so it wouldn't be impossible to just set them up to Bluetooth and say start.
Have a remote.
You've already written the algorithm.
I'm telling you, we really need to go do this. This is
Well, okay. We've got to
next
leave
year,
panel.
It'll be the iPhone Pocket Revolution in 3D.
In 3D, yeah.
Although, well, yeah. I do like the fact that, it, you know, here we've got a device. The fact that there's so many of these things gives device makers a big enough market to make accessories like the Glyph. You know, this guy down here has a thing called the M-Cam, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah.
No, completely. In fact, Corey has a handle that he's using to shoot our film right now. So it is possible to take this device and actually make it work in a little better form factor than it is, because a touchscreen isn't the greatest filming device in the world, because you have to touch it, which moves things. You have to hold it. But the fact that you can put it on a stable surface or put it in a stable handle means that you can do some really amazing stuff.
Yeah, and I think that you're hitting on a really important point we haven't touched on yet, and that's really the ecosystem that's evolved and around the iPhone filmmaking community. It's just huge. And, you know, a lot of people who first think about an iPhone as a filmmaking tool, their thoughts don't go beyond, well, you know, I have it in my hand, it's kind of, maybe it's clunky. That really has all disappeared. Sean brought up a good example of some of these devices and mounts. I mean, we're carrying this around South by. Again, this is the M-Cam that Sean pointed out. And it's pretty cool, and I'm not going to get into a whole demo of it, but, you know, essentially you do slip your camera into it, and the whole thing is machined with quarter-inch screw holes where you can mount almost any additional accessory. I mean, there's a cold shoe. We have a wireless receiver on it. So we can do a handheld interview if we want, or someone can wear a body pack. And of course, anything that fits in a cold shoe you could put on here, so that means lights and additional things. It could be mounted, and the really cool thing I think about it, and there are other devices like this, it's not the only one, I just think it's one of the most durable, is that it has removable lenses. Now, there are other lens systems out there that, through magnetics and different types of ways to attach to the phone itself, are attractive, but I find them they're not quite as steady. The images that you get out of the phone with just this M-cam and a lens that it comes with, and there are additional lenses, is amazing. It's wide angle, they're sharp, the stability plays a huge role. And when you start to put those images side by side with some of other higher-end cameras, it's really, if it's lit right, hard to tell.
I was going to say, the other thing to note with this, too, is it takes a 37-millimeter thread, which if you go on Amazon, you can get ND filters, you can get all sorts of things for very, very inexpensive because, you know, so we would have like a whole ND pack and filters, and they just screw in, you can stack them, there's macros, I mean, it's really impressive and durable. That's what we shot going
on. And it can tell you where the nearest Starbucks is, too.
Yes.
Yeah, right. So when you're ready, right. Or you're wondering where the kid
is. But make sure you put it in airplane mode. When we were shooting, my mom actually called during one of the like most crucial takes. It's like, you know, you pick up the rig and you're like, oh, Mom, I can't do this right now. I gotta go.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I know. We actually got a call while we're doing this. I'm like, oh, that's terrible timing. But anyway, this whole ecosystem is pretty amazing from Steadicams and otherwise. Do you have a question?
So while you're talking about that, I see you've got the Tascam microphone. I wonder what you think of that.
The sound quality is good, but it's only good for like because it's not a phantom powered mic. The gain on it is limited, so it works well in kind of a very close environment where if I was interviewing Serenity, I'd be fine. If I was trying to capture a group, not so much.
Yeah, they don't work so well. I've been on show floors like CES, the Consumer Electronics Trade Show, and having those little tiny mics when you're trying to get a crucial interview, it doesn't work so well. There are a couple of really nice accessories that allow you to either interact with Bluetooth mics, which are really cool, and then there's also one that allows you to basically plug in a quarter inch to an eighth inch so that you can not necessarily power phantom mics, but you can use shotgun mics to do interviews, you can buy, if you have a much nicer microphone than your iPhone camera, you can use this, you know, $30 accessory plug-in, and all of a sudden things are a lot better for you in the sound department.
Well, you know, talking about microphones, I mean, I was thinking you could actually make, you know, in London they have so many of those CCTV cameras. You could actually design a whole movie that you could actually create. And if you had the microphones to record everything and figured out a way of syncing it up, so you could have an action that takes place.
Yeah.
It goes from one CCTV camera to another and then onto the subways where they have them and everything else, and then use some kind of legal system to get it all and use and then cut it into a movie. I mean,
what's crazy too don't forget the phone has built-in noise cancellation because it's a phone, right? So that same noise cancellation is working when you're shooting. If I just have a DBX-100, you know, went back that far.
Yes.
If I have a DBX-100 opposite an iPhone and I'm just recording in the same setting, the wind noise and stuff I'm going to pick up on the DBX is much more. The iPhone, a lot of times, just be clean.
Yeah, I mean, I think, and I see a couple people have questions, I'm definitely going to call you. I just want to make this point that audio, I think, is one of still the mysteries when people want to do some filmmaking. And because Apple has this proprietary jack, you can't just take a mini stereo jack that's you get in Radio Shack, and plug it in, and then plug the other end, even though it'll fit, to some type of mic, whether it's an XLR adapter or a mini stereo female to XLR or whatever. But there is a company out there called KB Connections they make all types of cables, and their claim to fame really has been towards the iPhone filmmaking community. It's one guy who sources these out, he designs these cables, and they work perfectly. Actually, I have one right here. And it's hard to see probably from the audience, but basically this goes into the camera. It's terminated with Apple's proprietary input. And then on the other side, you can plug a mic in and also monitor the audio, which is, I think, what a lot of people want to do. And that's a big mystery. Yeah, it's a big mystery for a lot of people that are trying to capture better sound because everyone's pretty aware of how to, you know, make their images look pretty good. But I think people probably tolerate lower quality video before lower quality audio. And
you'd be surprised at how well a result you get by just coming up with a $15 cable and then going to Radio Shack or higher-end mics, Rode and Sennheiser and otherwise from there. So KB connections for anyone that had that question.
You know, we're talking, sort of the truism in filmmaking is, no disrespect to Caleb, but if you don't get the audio right, boy.
Yeah, the audio, exactly.
Your picture can be the prettiest in the world, but you don't want to listen to screeching audio for more than 5 seconds.
Yeah. I think a lot of people, what they're doing is recording to a secondary device and then using like Pluralize or whatever, which is just a way to get that audio off an H4N or something, and then they bring it into Final Cut and sync it up. And so what we experienced with the festival and some of the stuff that we got, a lot of people used the iPhone or iOS devices to shoot films and then preferred to offload their stuff to the desktop platform and cut from there. You know, there's no doubt about it. At the moment, you have greater control editing once you're on the computer. So I think some people make a mistake, though, that they think they can just ingest the footage through iPhoto or iMovie or whatever. And what's actually happening there is that that footage gets compressed again when they bring it over. And so we often get into a dialogue about the best way to get your footage off your phone that keeps it at its innate codec or its highest quality. And there's actually a 99-cent app, surprised by the price, right, that was called Photo Transfer. And it does more than transfer photos. It transfers anything out of your camera library. So you download the app, you turn it on, you have to be on Wi-Fi. It sees your computer, you go to your web browser, it gives you an ID because it sees the app that's on your phone, and then you type in the little internal IP address, and now your Mac sees through the web browser the interface of the app, which then in turn looks at the library of media that you have on your phone, and then it's just checking it off and saying transfer, and it transfers the true first generation of whatever media you're pulling over. And it's a really powerful thing because I think a lot of people don't understand and don't want to know about the codecs and things that happen when you pull stuff through, like an iPhoto or an iMovie.
You still do want to convert it, though, into something, that H.264 codec. It's very fragile.
And ProRes.
Yeah, ProRes. Yeah. You know, just throw it in compressor and...
Well, I just want to say, because I'm, you know, I'm not... I didn't grow up with the kind of technology that we have, so it's, you know, it's new to me. And to me, you know... Everything has to, you know, in order to make it really accessible to everybody, I think it needs to be simplified, because there's so many people in technological fields who tend to use terminology that kind of distances certainly people like me, and even younger people I know who've grown up with it. And I think, you know, the more people find ways of making it that much more accessible, the better it's going to be and the simpler it's going to be. So you don't have to read, you know, it's like, I mean, I remember having one of the early computers was a model, you know, 100 Radio Shack, which you had to program with BASIC and all this stuff, and it's crazy. I mean, that's the genius of Apple, is that they made it accessible, and I think that's where all the apps need to go as well. Yeah, another comment I just want to make is that, you know, at the beginning, the montage that we saw, I mean, I saw bits and pieces of some of the movies that, you know, Corey sent me, and I have to say, you really need to see the movies because they're just bits and pieces, but they're really, some of them are very sophisticated and very well made, and, you know, you really can't get an idea of the amount of storytelling that goes on in them from just the montages. So if you ever get a chance to check them, I don't know.
I appreciate that. I mean, you know, one of the things that surprised us most was the films that we got that went, that we received from all over the world, which we weren't sure what we were going to get when we had our inaugural call for entries. And as it turned out, some of the finalists in this festival were... there was a film that was shot in the Philippines in the most remote place. You'd never think that you would find any bit of technology there, but someone, sure enough, had an iPhone and turned us on to a community or a village of people. It's called Mud Place, is the name of the film, or Calapacan. And it's beautifully shot. You feel like you're a fly on the wall, and it's just because this one person had access to an iPhone. Did you have a question?
Yes, thank you.
You can step up to the mic if you prefer.
Sure, that's fine. For people who are interested in getting started, making films specifically with iPhone, what are the top two or three resources that we should look at as really a neophyte?
In terms of tools,
Yes, and process and everything for the iPhone itself.
Sure. I mean, I have my opinions, but I think Michael's done quite a bit, and I can certainly tag into that. Do you want to field that?
There's two apps that I use to acquire. One is Filmic Pro.
Big fan of Filmic Pro. I agree.
The other one's Almost DSLR. They're both good in their different ways. It's called Almost DSLR. But Filmic Pro is fascinating because it allows you to record at a higher bit rate and actually uses the full sensor of the camera as opposed to some of the other apps, which, you know, if you've ever changed from picture to video, it always kind of crops it. Filmic Pro uses the full sensor. As far as acquisition, you know, this it used to be called the Alibubo, now it's called the
M-Cam.
It's called the Focus now. I don't know. But it's great. It's fantastic. Put up by ALM Live. And honestly, that kind of gets you started. That gets you in the door. I mean, we have to remember, like, this is an entry-level device. You just need enough to be dangerous. And the fact is, you could go out and direct a movie with just the iPhone. On, like, when we did Apple of My Eye, that was just a video camera app. I mean, obviously, it's nice to be able to lock exposure and stuff like that, but... Like, there is no limitation anymore. Like, entry level, just go out and make a movie.
I think actually you just touched on something that some people also often, when they pick up the phone and using a camera, realize that, you know, the camera automatically sort of hunts for focus. And, you know, when you're trying to capture something, whether it's an interview or some action, that's just, you know, becomes, you just can't deal with it. It's very difficult unless you're really steady with the camera and your subject doesn't move that much. And Filmic Pro, not to hype a particular app too much, but it's just what's so great about it is you can lock the focus. So you'll see a little square, you can drag it to your subject, and then just lock it. So you've locked down your focus, and you can do the same thing with exposure. I mean, it does a lot of other things, some of which I spoke about. White balance. And that just ups your game so much. And again, it's, you know, a really inexpensive app, and just the power that it provides is pretty amazing.
Yeah, I don't even know how much it is. I know they run deals sometimes where it's just...
It's free right now, actually.
Yeah, it's free right now, I think, for South By.
Yeah. Filmic Pro. You bought it. Well, there's a good update.
Yeah.
I'm going to write it down.
Yeah, hi.
Yeah, I was talking about ColabraCam. It's, a $5 app that allows you to sync up various iOS devices through a local network, a Bluetooth, or a Wi-Fi network.
Yeah, I've seen it in use.
It's amazing.
It's really impressive. When I heard the description and they sent me a press release, I was kind of like, yeah, but does this really work? But no, you don't lose frames. And when you're giving directions, when you are the director and you're like, all right, you need to pan to the left, and on the sister device, it just shows an arrow that says pan left. That's almost instantaneous, even in a heavy load network. It was really, really impressive.
Yeah, it's like a live switcher is really what it is. And you can see the feeds. You know, I think right now it's over Wi-Fi, but they're figuring out a way to do it over cellular, because I actually met the designer at Macworld and we had a discussion, and because I found that application amazing as well. And what he's planning to do is, a little bit of what Caleb mentioned, is he wants to be able to take that application and have people in different parts of the world shoot. So if you have your iPad, you could direct and not have to necessarily be in the same geographic location, and you'll get the feed. So you can, you know, direct an event that you're not even near, and have, you know, remote people from all different parts of the world feeding to your iPad where you control and switch or just collect the footage to later cut something. So I think that's where it's going in a lot of ways. iCollaborate is cool.
Ours is Movie Looks.
Movie Looks HD.
Movie Looks HD is what it's called. It works on the iPhone and iPad.
And if you're looking for just a good time and having fun...
Don't give out your phone number. That's awkward.
I heard that's what you do at South By. No, there's an app that's put up by J.J. Abrams Interactive that does, like, built-in VFX. Caleb
just showed us some pretty cool stuff.
Where, like, you can, you know, shoot your kids and then... like blow them up with rocket launchers.
Well,
stuff.
Yeah.
You have to download it.
Yeah.
You probably don't want to shoot your kids. But.
Yeah. No. No.
You know,
it does.
Okay,
no, it does.
Have lens flares?
I believe there's a thing.
Yeah. You're right. Yeah.
Yeah. No.
I mean, you got to make fun of yourself when you're building an app like that.
That one's called Action Movie.
Is that what it's called? Action Movie?
Yes, Action Movie. That's
yeah, and that one's dangerous because I think it starts at 99 cents, but you can buy extra effects for another dollar or two. And
I think I've spent $12 so far.
So, yeah.
You know, I think, and we'll open it up to questions if anyone else has. I'm just going to actually show one more video, I think. And the reason I wanted to show it, I wasn't sure whether we were going to get to it or not, but I think it's just a really creative use of using multiple cameras, because that's come up in our dialogue a lot today. And, you know, you have to give it a moment to really see what's going on, how clever all the choreography was. So take a look. This is actually one of our finalists as well. Oh, did I mess it up? Sorry, give me a sec. Let's try again.
Resulta ser que en mi opinión eres algo medio oscuro, algo gris de corazón. Resulta ser que en mi opinión eres un desastre, un alma en pudrición. Y me veo hablándole al espejo, y me río gritándole al espejo. Que mi obsesión es algo que yo oculto y reflejo en mi razón. Resulta ser que mi opinión, el credo que predico, se ofende perversión. Y te veo atrapado en un espejo, mano en el gatillo.
So all shot in camera and then recorded by it, right? I wish I could take credit for it, you know, but we saw that come in and we were just blown away. We were like, oh my God. I, you know, people think they're, we thought we were going to get cat videos, you know, we're cute little cats. And we're like, oh my God, it just made us feel so inspired to what was going on out there. Because what it does, I think it just reframes what your expectations are. And I think that's one of the most powerful things that we've been saying here, and that's the theme. It's, you know, the technology is accessible, but it's when someone twists it just a little bit to use it in an unexpected way is where you start to say, holy shit, like, that is cool. That is just really engaging. I hope I didn't offend anybody. I said shit.
Yeah, I think the potential for unexpected genius is really enormous when you get it out there to so many people, and I think that's what we have to look forward to, and where it goes.
Oh, no, I agree. We've got the five-minute mark. So I thought if anyone has questions, this would be a good time to ask. Yes, in the back. You want to step up to the mic so everybody could hear? It might be better. Sorry, that means you got to put like all your gear down, and that's a pain.
He's hiding in the back.
Thank you very much. Crazy question here. Do all these iPhones have data plans with calling plans?
Do they all have calling plans? Well, you don't need a calling plan to make a film on your phone.
Right, I understand. I just wondered if...
Oh, are you selling calling
throw
plans?
Throw down for that. No, I wasn't. I was just...
Mine has a data and a calling plan. It is my phone, and when mine we were too. Making movies, it's in airplane mode, which really can make your producer upset when they can't get a hold of you, but you...
Yeah, or your mom.
Or your mom.
Yeah, we would also use... older phones, so like I had when I upgraded to the iPhone 4S, my iPhone 4 became my camera, dedicated camera, because as anybody who's used an iPhone for a long period of time knows, if you're using it as your main device and you're calling and you're doing all kinds of things on it, battery goes down a little bit quickly. So yeah. Having it as a separate device and then just making it airplane mode all the time and not having a data plan is way
sure.
to go.
Agree.
Hi.
Cool, thanks. Hi, my name is Brett Besson. I teach media studies in North Texas at a school called Austin College. And I was wondering if Apple has been very supportive of some of the things you guys are talking about.
Mm-hmm.
To what extent? Are there any things that they don't like? That kind of stuff.
Well, if they didn't like what we were doing, we wouldn't be doing it. They would have just squashed us like a bug. It's an interesting question. I'll answer quickly so we can get everyone's question in. But when we first came out with the festival, we did get a call from Apple, which immediately provoked a cold sweat. But it turned out to be a really great conversation, and it was with the director of marketing for iMovie, who was really behind what we were doing. And in fact, was nice enough to take the time to talk a little bit about how we were calling for entries and walked us through shaping our site. And we found that really helpful. So we took that as support. They're not in any way sponsoring us. We have a legal disclaimer. We have no affiliation with them. But we just thought that was nice because we really expected it. If the call was coming, then we were just going to be shut down. But in truth, it's been just the opposite. And the support we've gotten from not only Apple, but a lot of amazing sponsors, which I'm not going to go through and bore you, but has been incredible. So you can see more on our site at iPhoneFilmmaker.com or Original iPhone Film Fest.
You guys have been really inspiring. Pulled out a lot of app names, and I think, especially for us foreigners who don't have data access at the moment, it'd be great if you guys could like tweet out or send out the links to the lows. It'd be good.
If you come see us after this, because we'll probably get kicked off in a minute, I'll give you a card to our site that's exactly what we have. We have something called iPhoneFilmmaker.com, not to put our little plug on right now. But because we have become the hub of everything iPhone filmmaking through this festival, we found ourselves in a position of responsibility. And so we saw the niche right away for an area to educate. We have a soft launch of it now. It exists in blog format. But at the end of April, it's going to go full-blown. So see us after. I'll give you a card, and you can get a list and a lot more info.
Just a secondary. Michael, just with, I guess, pickup of people watching a series, have you found that having a dedicated app for your own series being more beneficial or going with someone like one of the bigger guys like Blip or something like that? Have you had thoughts about that?
Are you saying that we think making the series is better than a bunch of individual films?
Well, no, I guess have you found that having an app, a dedicated app where people could go to and get pushed, as you say?
As opposed to like a Vimeo app.
No, it's huge. We have lots and lots of downloads of the app, and within releasing an episode, at least half of the people that have the app have watched the episode, and we're talking like 100,000 people. It's very, the Goldilocks series is huge in Germany and Spain. We don't know exactly why, I absolutely recommend it. I think everybody used to have a MySpace, and there was a blog, and a Zanga. If you're a creative, your work should be being distributed through an app. I think it's where it's headed.
Yeah. So I know we're getting like the kill sign. So I just want to thank our panelists for participating today. I really appreciate it.